So I guess, gauging whether this is like how formal or informal this is, so we try to balance between somewhere in there. Of course, questions are always welcome. My budget, actually budgeted my talk about 1 hour. I heard I won't have a total of 1 hour, but we won't be able to finish everything anyway. So let me start. So robotics, of course, is inherently multidisciplinary. Effective robotic research may engage many different disciplines: math, physics, mechanics, chemistry, biology, medicine, brain science, and of course, computers. So I'm broadly interested in robotics with a focus on Darwinian aspects of things related to robotics. So I thought a little bit about what I want to cover in this talk. I decided to go with 12 of these combinatorial problems that I've been looking at in the past couple of years. So the first of these problems is on multi-robot path and motion planning, where in general you want to route a large number of these robots among each other from some initial configuration to some goal configuration. And a second and related problem is on multi-object rearrangement, where we want to rearrange some objects from some initial configuration to some goal configuration. Now the difference between these two problems is that here all the objects can move independently and simultaneously. And here we have some robotic manipulator that moves one object at a time. I want to first, of course, recognize my collaborators on this research. Anne and Lei are my PhD students. And Nick is a postdoc hosted by Kostas and myself. Nassis is a recent PhD graduate of Kostas, and is our postdoc. So let me cut right into the first problem on multi-robot path and motion. Now this is an important subtext that is present in many larger tasks, for example, blocking of traffic, coordinating a large number of robots to do some more interesting things, like robot soccer, or planning for moving these automated straddle carriers as these carriers in these container ports. There are actually quite a few of these now. Fully automated container ports operate around the world. Singapore, Brisbane, Los Angeles, and so on. This one I believe is from Los Angeles. And of course, coordinating many of these system robots in Amazon warehouse. Nowadays, you can run up to thousands of these in a single warehouse. So, the premise of this part of the study on algorithmic issues in multi robot test learning is to help understand, enable, and improve these real-world applications.
That would be the soccer robot.
Yeah. Yeah, this is of course global soccer, and it of course has any many kind of real-world implications, the way you can call these teams. Okay, today I'll discuss a class of graphical rhetoric formulation for multi-robot patch learning. So I'll provide a concrete foundation to begin with. So we're given usually a graph with a set of vertices and edges, and the graph is usually assumed to be connected. And we're also given a set of robots, in this case four of them. They occupy a set of vertices of this graph. We call this the configuration of the robots. Usually we're given a start, a vocal, we're asked to produce a set of paths, one for each of these robots, so that we can move this robot from the start configuration to the goal configuration. In a given time step, the robot can move from its current vertex to an adjacent one, as long as it does not hit other robots along the way. So that means there are two types of moves that are forbidden. That is, we cannot have two robots trying to change their location on an edge in the same step. We also cannot have two robots trying to go to the same vertex in one step. But beyond these all other moves have failed. Okay, so of course we're interested in solving these things in some sense optimally, and we look at several optimality objectives. The first one of this is mean back time, or often known as mean waste time, which is essentially trying to minimize the time it takes to complete the task. We can also talk about things like mean total time, that is minimizing the total time to sum up all the individual time for each robot. We can also talk about mean max distance and mean total distance that are defined similarly as the time counterparts. So given the time that I have, I'll mainly focus on the mid span objective in this talk. And I want to mention that here, where the ultimate goal we're trying to shoot for is actually optimal or near optimal solution, that is 1.x optimal solution. Because in practice, that's what matters. We don't want, in the end, we don't want something like 10 times or 15 times optimal. That's not good enough. Of course, in some of the studies we're just beginning to work on, we do have results that have this kind of play. Okay, so I've been working on this problem actually for a few years, probably 5-6 years now. I will contrast, let's list some of these past results and contrast them with what we have achieved in the past couple of years. So on the side of complexity, we've been able to show that these problems are actually pretty hard on general graphs. Now recently, we were able to extend that to planar graphs, which is a more typical result of the thing. And on the side of algorithm, we were able to before build an integer linear programming based algorithm that works quite well. And recently, we were able to further improve the algorithm by adding additional heuristics. And we also have been able to extend this continuous discrete settings to very dense continuous settings. And more recently, we're also able to obtain a constant factor optimal algorithm. This now is a polynomial time algorithm for well-connected settings, something like this. And on the side of experimental effort, I'm developing in my lab a modular platform. Each one of these vehicles is about this size for both research and education purposes. So I'll highlight some of these things that we've done here. Again, questions are welcome at any point. So I'll start with the quick kind of review of the result of complexity. So before we were able to show that these problems are hard through a quick reduction from the reset problem. Now given the reset instance with in this case four variables and three causes, we can build a mean mixed span multi-robot test time problem by first constructing these sort of variable gadgets. Where we place robots on this side, we want this robot to go to that side. And we also then add these clause gadgets based on these clauses. And we place robots here and ask them to kind of go to this side. And if we do this construction carefully, we could show that this reset instance is satisfiable if and only if this mean mixed-span multi-robot test planning instance has a mix span of this m plus 2, m is the number
of modules. Are these C1, C2, C3 on the left hand side really connected like that?
So these are where currently initially the robots are. And these green ones are where they should be going to.
Yeah, but my question is C1, C2, C3 have to be connected as a path?
So this is a path. Yeah. This is one edge. All these are a single edge. So the this is actually one of the proofs that I think are quite cute, but unfortunately I don't have time to go through in details. So using such a reduction, we could show that multi-robot test planning is a big part when we are optimizing this mix. And we could also show using similar reductions, the distance ones are actually quite more involved. but we can kind of show nevertheless all these bumps are pretty hard. And I would mention here that the entire result actually holds even if we let all these robots become kind of interchangeable, that is, we do not distinguish between these two, and we do not distinguish between these three. But it's even if we just have two groups of robots, if you want to coordinate motion between two groups of robots, it's already going to be much better. On the other hand, if you want to coordinate a single kind of group of robots, that problem can be solved efficiently. So in some, in a sense, our result here is quite tight. So we've been able to extend the result to nanographs. Now the reduction is somewhat similar, but we based our reduction on a EPR instance that is known as standard monotone reset. So this is essentially a three-step problem with some additional properties. Well, the first property is that because either has only positive variables, positive literals, or has only negative literals. So this is the one, the monotone part. And the kind of part is that if you draw a line and put all the variables on there, and then you can actually embed the causes in such a way that all the positive ones will be on one side, all the negative on the other side, and the embedding is also planning. So from here, we can build a planner multi-robot test planning instance. This is a very high-level sketch. Essentially, we kind of split this thing up, and we put all the positive ones as these robots here, and the negative ones as robots here. We basically ask these to kind of cross the middle part. And it turns out that, again, we can show that we have a satisfiable assignment here if and only if this instance emits a mean mixed time solution. We can also do this for the other types of problems, including time and distance objectives. So, I mean, this kind of harness proof there, cute and have some implications on the algorithm side. Particularly, I think these planner proofs actually also have some other practical relevance in that an optimal planner multi-robot path planning problem is hard, kind of implies that path routing in our ROM net is also kind of difficult to do. That is, if we all want to get up in the morning, get in our car, and try to get to our destination as fast as possible, we're essentially trying to solve one of these multi-robot coordination problems on our road network, which is a hard problem to solve. We cannot hope to basically get a polynomial time algorithm and find the exact solution. So that means one alternative is to hope for a polynomial time suboptimal solution. And another perspective we can take is that we can potentially try to engineer the environment, which is already actually currently being done quite often if you pay attention. Essentially, we want to reduce kind of one-way roads. So these are actually kind of one-way roads and also intersections. Right? So for example, we have all these multi-lane two-way roads in practice. And we also have all these fancy intersections. All these actually kind of basically reduce this kind of potential for robots to collide each other or for traffic to kind of get into each other. Okay, so that's the complexity part of the problem that we studied. And now I'll move into the algorithmic aspect. So because the multi-robot test planning problem we want to solve is going to be hard, what that means is that unless P equals NP, we cannot hope to find algorithms, polynomial time algorithm, for solving this exactly. So then, if we want to solve this, and still do it fast enough, we need to look kind of elsewhere. We've tried also to work with things like a star-based algorithm. Turns out these actually do not scale very well. So we tried a integer linear program-based algorithm that actually worked quite well. So I'll give a very high-level overview of what this algorithm looks like. So we transform here the multiple path planning problem into a multi-modal flow problem over time horizon. So what we're doing here is we take a graph And then we make multiple copies of them over time horizon, and then we have them using edges. So here, the edges become the binary variables in our integer linear program. So if an edge variable is zero, it is not visible to one of these views. So, of course, we cannot just connect these edges arbitrarily. We have to connect them such that we encode all the collision avoidance constraints. We call that there are two types of collisions that we want to avoid. One is when two robots want to move to the same vertex in one step, and the other one is when two robots want to exchange location within the same edge. I will not get into details, but essentially, we can encode these using linear constraints. And putting everything together, we'll be able to get a integer linear program that encodes the entire multiple test parameter problem. And we can then throw that into a solver and get a pretty reasonable solution in a pretty reasonable amount of time.
Sorry, what solver are you using?
I use Groovy.
Well, me too.
pretty well. I mean, it's free also. Okay. Things, so, yeah. So we were able to actually solve quite large instances using this method. But nevertheless, you know, there's always larger instances that we can.
How many variables and how many times transfer
that? Actually, it gets to somewhere like between a few million at some point. It actually worked quite well. I was surprised actually it worked that well. So, if you. Of course, you can keep making the problem larger and larger. Turns out that you don't need actually a big, huge problem to make the ILP quite large. So for example, if we are working on a 20 by 15 grid with some 20 robots, which will give you some around 20 steps to complete, this already kind of creates an integer linear program with about 1 million variables. So if we make the problem even larger, well, it becomes harder and harder to solve. So we thought we could perhaps make the solver work a little bit less by using a divide and conquer approach to split the problem over time. So we're trying to split things over the time domain. So I'll give you a very kind of quick kind of review of how this is done. Given a problem where we want to route these four robots on this 4x4 grid to this configuration, what we do is we inject an intermediate configuration. And like we mentioned that here, robot 4 has to travel at least 6 steps, but has to go something like that. And that means we need to construct a time expansion with 6 steps in the middle. We want to kind of cut that down. What we do is we inject something in the middle, and we basically place these robots somewhere in the middle as well. So one can place it here. From here it's only 2 steps, and from here 2 steps all the way to go. Now we can do the same for 2, 3, and 4. I should mention that depending on the density, this might not always be possible, but when it is possible, we were able to cut the problem effectively into smaller pieces. And once we cut the problem into smaller pieces, it can be solved much faster. Of course, the downside is that because the injected configuration may not be one that belongs to an optimal solution, we lose completeness. So we may not get the true optimal solution anymore. So let me highlight some of the performance that we can get with these methods. And this is one of the kind of instances that we attempted on. This is 24 by 18 grid. We remove some of this. We remove some of these vertices to simulate kind of obstacles. Now this is actually one of the hardest instances where we remove 25% of vertices. But in general, we work with a 24 by 18 grid here. So if we run the exact algorithm, we can actually get to about 100 robots. And we can solve it in general under 100 seconds, and lots of this actually under 10 seconds. Now, if we engage the heuristic, we can actually push that to about 180 robots for various kind of obstacles. And I will mention here that this is actually very, very dense. We have about 44% of the what is it occupied by robots. And on the as a contrast, in this case, the density is only 15%. Our graph
so
is.
So does it get harder with density or not?
Of course. It's just if you jam a lot of people in the same room, it's very hard to get along. So it's the same problem. Okay, so our graph-based multi-robot test planning algorithm actually also are highly effective as a method for finding an initial set of optimal or near-optimal trajectories for solving continuous problems. So we have used it in our own kind of solver for 2D continuous problems. And because our algorithm is really based on graph, that means it can scale to higher dimension as well. Graphs themselves, they don't really have a dimension kind of constraint on them. So we have our algorithm being adapted by other work, including people at USC, who used our algorithm to generate baseline trajectories for causing a large number of these small drones. And it's also being adapted by people at MIT to coordinate this interesting, vehicle that can both move on the ground and fly. It's a small kind of drone car. And they use a graph like this to generate the initial trajectories using our algorithm. Yeah?
Just a general question about Google Bees. So you have a server that sits at the side and solves the problem. You formulate it, you ship it over, you solve it, right? Now, Google is basically branch and bound. So have you looked into issues, first of all, how to change your constraints so that the solver can actually be faster?
Yeah, so actually I've tried this quite a bit. We have some, so for example, I did try to reduce the number of variables and try to kind of do this reachability analysis, a bunch of stuff that goes into actually the detail which I did not mention. So we did try quite a few things to try to essentially reduce the size of the model. But it turns out that group itself is somehow very smart.
Well, the size is actually not the issue. The structure is the problem, right? The problem is the structure that it has hard time with. Then actually, a bigger problem might be to solve faster.
The
structure is.
It turns out that this problem, we're a little bit of course, we're a little bit desperate in the sense that we tried discrete algorithms. It actually did not work basically at all for very hard instances. And Groovy itself has some pretty interesting optimization technique. And this, of course, is also because we are turning this multi-robot test planning problem, which is NP-hard, into this multi-commodity flow, which is also NP-hard. So we're basically throwing in a hard problem. We cannot, unfortunately, have guarantees.
What about using Ruby as a heuristic generator? Lots of time, at least in my experience in Ruby, what they spend is to have to prove that the solution that they have is optimal, rather than having the solution already. So there are two things, right? So you could, for instance, try things like, give me the best thing after 4 seconds, and run with that.
The difficult part is actually finding the initial solution can be very, very challenging.
Sure. Yeah. But then,
for this particular problem.
I see. So you don't believe that there may be a wiggle room there?
Yeah, it's very hard to wiggle. Hard to wiggle.
Thank you.
For this particular, I understand what you're saying, yeah. But for this particular problem, it's actually very hard to find that wiggle room. Let me maybe highlight our own extension to continuous domain. So here we have two instances, one without internal obstacles, the other one with some internal obstacles. We have 75 robots here and 50 robots here. So let me start the animation. Now these blue ones are the initial or current location of the robot, and the pink or reddish ones are where they should be going. So for this instance, we can compute a 1.6 mix span optimal solution using only 1.7 seconds on a computer like this one. For this one, we compute the 1.9 optimal solution in about 4 seconds.
Is the complexity depending on the type of obstacles you have?
Well, basically,
complex sets, or then triangles, and it's not triangles, is it harder or is it easier?
Yeah, so in general, this one related to something I'll talk about in a bit as well. In general, the connectivity matters. If you have good connectivity, meaning you have, if you cut through a graph, you can have a good kind of connectivity between every cut you make. You kind of have a nice kind of setting, but otherwise, the problem is it's just very, very hard. It's just like you have a bunch of cars here, a bunch of cars here, you want all of them to pass through a one-way street. It's kind of hopeless. Okay, so in comparison, the other kind of algorithm that I could find that solves similar problem can scale to about 10 also robots. So now, while these ILP-based methods, they work reasonably well, they unfortunately do not kind of provide a worst-case guarantee on the time it takes to generate a good solution. So that's kind of a little bit sad. On the other hand, if we pay attention to practical multi-robot systems, we could observe that all these systems, they kind of have a grid-like graph structure. That is, their kind of structure looks more or less like a grid. Now, by the way, here, the robot actually can go under these kind of shells. This is a kind of this kind of translated into a more graphical representation. The robot actually can go under these shells. So we're thinking, right, perhaps there's something actually we can say about this kind of grid-like graph. So we started looking at this problem. And since we're working on this, we thought we might as well look at the hardest case. That is, we're looking at the case where every single vertex of this grid is actually occupied by a robot. We want to kind of route this robot from this kind of configuration to that kind of configuration. So, so far we've been able to get some interesting result. One of the slightly earlier one is for randomly distributed start and go configurations, we can get an expected O1 makes an optimal solution in polynomial time. And recently we were able to actually remove this expectation part of the problem. We can actually do this for arbitrarily distributed start and go configuration. We can get a O1 makes an optimal solution in polynomial time. So I'll highlight a little bit how we can achieve this. So to define a problem, we just need two parameters really, the number of rows and the number of columns, ms times ml. So we have ms times ml number of robots populating this grid. And this is, of course, randomly distributed. For the Go computation, we can actually just assume we have this row major ordering of these robots. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. To go about solving this, what we do is a kind of divide and conquer approach. We try to break down the problem at the top level into two smaller columns. To do that, we kind of basically split along the longer dimension of the grid. And this kind of split also induces a split between these robots here. So here, all the purple ones are the ones that should end up to the left side of this grid. And all the orange ones are the ones that should end up on the right side. So what we want to do is essentially group them so that the purple ones will end up on this side and the orange ones will end up on the other side. We call this a split and group operation. Now, after this split and group, the important thing to notice is that we now kind of split the problem into two completely disjoint problems. We can then basically use the same method repeatedly and solve the problem. Now the left one and the right one are completely irrelevant to each other. So if we can do this first step, in ML plus MS, O ML plus MS mixed step. Now if we do this recursively, we end up with, again, the same thing. But if we can solve the first step using this much mixed step, we can solve the entire problem also using this next time. So the rest becomes how we can really achieve this. To do this, we need kind of a few premises. The first one that's very important is we need to be able to do what we call an edge flip. So I illustrate with this, this with a animation. So we have this case here where we want to flip robot 2 and 3 within this 2x3 grid. So we can do this using three steps. First, we can rotate this 4 cycle along this along the counterclockwise direction to get this configuration. And then we rotate this left 4 cycle again counterclockwise to get this configuration. And then we do it one more time now along this 6 cycle clockwise. So we can get this 2 and 3 now flipped with all the other robots actually in place. So with this, this is done in O1. We can actually do multiple of these so-called edge flips concurrently on the larger graph. That is, we can flip all these edges as long as these edges are disjoint. We can flip all of them simultaneously, more or less. And from here, we can get a composition that looks like that. What this also means is that we can kind of can forget about one part of the thing. We just need to look at this one side of the edge. We don't need to care about the other side of the edge. So we'll be using this to achieve this group operation. So we're trying to basically go from this to that. Using this, because we want to use this edge frame, that means we can also kind of forget about one type of robot. That is, we can forget about, for example, the purple ones. If we can move these orange ones off the right, it's equivalent, I mean, at the same time, also moving the purple ones to the left. So what we do then, we apply a network flow or a Hungarian method to group these things into these trees. We have actually here 5 rows. We'll build 5 of these trees. Each of these trees, let's look at this top one here, we'll be able to shift 4 of these robots to these 4 locations, completing one row. And to do this, we basically use our edge flips that was shown in the previous slide. We start from these 3 edges, and we flip them, we get this, and we can keep doing this, and so on. In the end, we could show that we can move the robots on a tree in ML plus MS mixed time steps. And we can operate on all these trees with a bit kind of wiggling. We can operate on all these trees simultaneously. So we do not incur additional time or any mixed time to do this. So this is what we need, and this is what we have. So this completes essentially the entire algorithm. So this line of work, I think it also has some relevance toward neural network design. So what we have shown kind of implies that grid-like neural network are somewhat optimal. So this is the case even when everything is like jam-packed. So perhaps I thought this could potentially help explain why we have Manhattan-like road network design. Because even if we are like very, very jammed, we can still kind of try to get to where we want to go in a constant factor optimum. Of course, here the constant factor can be pretty large. But, it may also help explain the success of commercial mobile robot systems like this Amazon warehouses, where they could call in a really very large number of these robots. Although, the problem seems to be hard if I try to look at the condensing. And another thing from our research that kind of implies is that dimensions kind of matter. That is, if you want to rent a hub, a warehouse, to build your own multi-robot system kind of warehouse, for example, if you are presented with 2 kind of floor plans, with one as a narrow kind of setup and the other one has a more square setup, you probably want to go with this kind of setup because that will give you kind of this smaller diagonal and in general more efficient seat. So from there we also have some additional development. I think I'll probably quickly through this. As I mentioned, we could actually get rid of that expected O1 optimal and get it deterministic from the factor of the this, this one is a bit more involved, not goes through the details here. And we also have been able to do this in a continuous domain. This kind of basically works readily without obstacles. I'm not actually going to details about this. I want to mention that this work is done by student Han, also in collaboration with one of these dynamics I use. So I appreciate this kind of opportunity to work with them. So we submit this to ICRO to probably hear about the result in a few months. I think I'll skip the video here. So I want to mention a little bit about the hardware environment that we're doing in my lab. So we developed this kind of small multi-vehicle platform. This is one vehicle. We have everything developed in our lab. It's big. We 3D print the shell and we have some of these components. And this is kind of a fun project when I was first up. And we completed the software step here at Rutgers. And currently we're at version 3. Now it's a fully open source multi-robot platform. It costs about $300 at this current iteration for a system with 6 cars and all the other aspects like vision and everything. And it serves multiple purposes. One of the purposes is to do our own experimentation of our algorithms. And I also want to use this in future kind of robotics courses here at Rutgers. And of course, for robotic education and research elsewhere, it has already been adopted by people as Houston, Michigan Tech, and Purdue. These are the people I know who are using this. They're probably more adoption out there. So here I will show you a video of our robot system carrying out our algorithm. So this should be great. Kind of cute to observe. And you're welcome to come to my lab sometime to see this in person as well. So this is the Python UI, and that is the actual robot system. So, okay, so now I think I'm done with the topic on multiple task planning. I'll switch to the other problem on automating objects rearranging tasks. So here, you might, for example, have a messy desk, or have a bunch of toys scattered on the ground, and it would be nice to have a friendly robot help you kind of clean the mess. Of course, we're still very, very far away from having such a robot. We need to solve a lot of problems before that, computer vision, planning, control, and many, many things. So every project with Costas that tries to take baby steps towards solving such problems. So currently, we're looking at a couple of problems that try to plan for efficient object rearrangement. So there are two problems we're currently looking at. One of them is the tabletop set, where you have a bunch of objects scattered on the tabletop. You want to kind of move them around and tidy things up. So here, the assumption is that the robot manipulator can go and pick up the object, lift it up, and move it, drop it down without worrying about hitting other things. As long as the place you want to drop it is free. So this is the assumption here. We'll call this tabletop rearrangement. And the second problem that we looked at is a more constrained case where you might have a shelf-like environment where you can only access now from the front of this shelf. And we also assume here these objects are arranged into columns. So from this initial configuration, you might want to achieve a goal configuration that looks like that. And now we call this stack rearrangement. So I'll go through some of the results we have on this. So on the tabletop rearrangement problem, we have actually a few variations. We call this baseline problem total tabletop object rearrangement with overhead grasp. And one of the variables is total no, that is when the start and the goal configurations have no overlap between each other. So it looks like this. this might be the subconfiguration, and I want to move these objects to these scope configurations. And see that there's no kind of overlap here. What that means is that you kind of only need to lift one object one time and be done with that object. And in the second variant, which is more general, but total, the start and the goal configurations may overlap. Well, the scenario may look like this. You have this as your start configuration, and you have this as your goal configuration. Now here, in order for the number to move this delta to its goal, you kind of have to move this goal elsewhere first. And between this goal and this drive, you actually cannot move any one of these to its goal without moving the other. You kind of have to move both of them. So, to optimize, we want to first minimize the number of these movements, the grasps. And as a secondary goal, we also want to minimize the end effector travel distance. We want to minimize how much effector at the end, I guess, the arm need to travel. So let's first look at this torrent node, where the start and the goal configurations do not overlap. Now, this problem may look quite simple. It turns out that it's still a computationally challenging problem, because we could actually make a very easy reduction from the TSP to our problem. If you take an even TSP problem, which is basically defined by a set of points embedded in 2D, we could take this and create a torrent node instance by place our weak leader in one at one of the points. And for all the other points, we split it into a start and a goal configuration. So this is our the start of an object, this is the goal of an object. So if we construct this carefully, that is, if we choose how large this epsilon is where we create our start and goal configuration, we could show that the TSP tool of the original problem corresponds to an optimal solution of our torrent node instance. And this is also the one-one relationship. And I should mention that even if all the objects are interchangeable, the reduction still holds. So that's with that. Now, interestingly, we could also kind of do the reverse reduction. That is, you could also convert this torrent node problem into a TSP problem. That is, if we start with a torrent node instance, that is, I want to move this guy here, this guy there, and this guy here, using this computation, we could construct a TSP on a graph. So this will become our computator, this are the start, and these are the goal configurations. We just need to create a graph that looks like this, where we connect this computator to all the start and the goals, and also build a bipartite graph between the start and the goal. We want to force, once you pick up something, you have to kind of move it to the target. To do this, we add some of these actual vertices onto this graph. And this gives us, again, a reduction from here to here. Now, the important thing here is that once we reduce this to TSP, this is kind of one of these easier TSP problems. We can use an off-the-shelf TSP solver to actually solve our problem optimally. And it turns out this is actually a very effective way of solving the problem. You could solve problems with 200-300 objects in under 1 second. So now, that's the oral node, no overlap. Now let's look at the case where we actually have overlap. So again, here we have this sprite wants to move here, the coke wants to move here, and this fencer wants to move here. How do we capture kind of this structure? We could do this using what we call an object dependency. That is, if we take all these objects and create vertices for them, we will create an edge. If, for example, you want to move this fenta here, we'll have to move this first, right? So this fenta is dependent on this code. We'll create all these edges like this, and this encodes actually all the dependency that we have. To be able to solve a problem like this, recall that we have a single manipulator. We have to kind of move either this or that somewhere else. For example, if we move the coke away, This basically represents we're able to now break the dependency between this and that and this and that. It turns out that doing this, that is minimizing the number of graphs, is equivalent, almost equivalent, to finding a minimum feedback vertex. And this feedback vertex that found is actually one of the original 21 NP hard NP complete problem in that proposed. But the problem is basically this. If you are given a graph, in this case a directed graph, feedback vertex set from asks you to find a set of vertices whose removal will make the graph disconnected. That is, you remove all the cycles inside the graph. So it turns out this is exactly the problem we want to solve. And we can also build a two-way reduction between our problem and this feedback vertex set problem. And we can then use an algorithm for this, which we use an integer linear programming solver to actually solve it. We can then get the minimum number of classes. And from there, we can then sequentially find the shortest distance traveled by the linear arm. So here, we did some also, we did a lot of simulations, and we also did some real experiments that actually kind of show that our hypothesis is quite reasonable. So here we have a toroidal instance with our optimal algorithm versus a kind of grid algorithm. Hopefully we're wrong here. Well, this manipulator actually operating on this. We could actually save a little bit here, time in moving these things along. Now here I should mention that the majority of time actually is spent on sucking things up and dropping things down. If we remove that part, we actually get a saving about 30%. Here we have the general toro instance where we want to rearrange all these objects into some more nicer arrangement where all these colors kind of align. Now for this case, we could actually save significantly if we use an optimal algorithm. The optimal solution takes about 300 seconds, whereas a greedy algorithm would take about 400 seconds. I think that will stop the video. Okay, so I think now I'm actually on the last part I want to introduce to you, which is rearranging objects on shelves. So I guess the inspiration behind this study is that go to a grocery store or Walmart. That more often than not, notice that sometimes there are kind of things that are out of order where they should be grouped together and they're not. And of course, you want to go find your favorite beer. Sometimes you notice that annoying to see that this thing should probably be here, this one should be here, for example. And there are, of course, also people who try to kind of hide stuff intentionally. So imagine you want to kind of solve this thing, you know, in the future we hopefully will have a store without, you know, people working there all the time, but you have robots instead of doing all this kind of tidying things up for you. So we want to kind of solve the problem like this. This inspires us to solve this stack rearrangement. Of course, you cannot basically take everything apart, right? You kind of have to kind of work with limited buffer space. So we formulate this problem as follows, that rearrangement problem. We kind of have a problem that looks like this. We have some many columns, and each column has certain depth p. And we assume that we have a buffer column where we can use to kind of do buffering. And given sort of an initial arrangement of these objects, we want to kind of basically sort them into their respective columns. So I hope the problem itself is reasonable here. So we can define basically the stack rearrangement problem using two parameters, N and D. And the input would be simply the number of columns and then the depth of the stack, and also an initial stack contribution. And the output would be a sequence of first in and first out operations that actually rearrange the step. Every time basically you can take something out and put it here and move things around. So we want to basically minimize the number of this kind of moving around devices. And I'll mainly focus on the case where we just want to sort things into columns. But we can also address the case where objects may be actually labeled. They have further kind of labels of basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. So I'll mention a few things that we've done. This is still, in some sense, ongoing research. So first, such problems is actually always feasible. That is, we can always arrange a stack from any initial configuration to any goal configuration. To see this, let's look at a very simple example of moving something from the bottom of the stack to the top of the stack. Now, if we can do this, we can actually do anything we want. But how do we do this? We basically first move this side here, and that allows us to then move these two things here, and then we can move this guy here, and then we can reverse and move these three things here, and then we move this guy here, and then get what we want. And we can do this in about OD number of classes. And what that means is that we actually now get a naive algorithm that solves any problem we want to solve in ND squared number of classes. And on the side of the, so this gives us an upper bound. On the side of the lower bound, we can kind of just do an analysis like following. There are at most ND factorial possible stack configurations, right? And at each step, we can move at most N objects. And we can choose one from this N possible columns and move it to another one of these n columns. So we have n squared number of choices at each step. So if we kind of do a very simple computation, we can get that we need at least nd log d over log n number of moves to solve any such problems. So this gives us a lower bound. So our research, of course, is focused mainly on obtaining better upper bounds. So here I will illustrate how we can get a slightly better outcomes. What we'll be doing is now sorting something like this. So we have all these things. We want to sort them into individual columns. And then we actually put this column on there. So how do we go about it? We again use our favorite thing, divide and conquer. And what we do is we now try to sort things into two types of things first. That is, here, red represent the red, orange, yellow, and green there. And here, blue represents blue, pink, purple, and navy blue there. So what we want to do is we want to solve these first into their individual columns. But to do this, we can do it, we work with individual columns. So first, we have three red and three blue here. What we do, we kind of split this thing into three and three. And then we can sort. So what we do is now we move this guy here, and move this guy here, this guy here, this guy here, this guy here, and this guy here. So we can get this. And then again, put things back. Now we can move this three red here and this three blue here. Now if we keep doing this for every single column, we can get something that looks like this. And this takes our takes O and D operations. And then I'm omitting a bit things here. We can also do another one of rearranging, which takes another O and D. We can actually sort everything into their individual columns. So we do not really care about all these things being in the same part of the, I guess, column. This does not matter. We don't need to have red, blue, blue, and blue. That's not really matter. Okay, so from there, so this is our first iteration. Then we can do the same thing Now, you can then kind of sort the, this one representing red, orange, yellow, and green. So we can do a further sort and then partition that into two. We have red, red, yellow, and yellow, where red represents the red and orange, and yellow represents yellow and green, and so on. So basically, we can keep doing this. And each one of this, again, requires O and D operation. So we put everything together, we get a ND log N algorithm for solving our problem. Now, if we want to solve the label case, we need to do some actual work. That actually makes our algorithm a bit more time-consuming in some cases. We can get an algorithm that runs in ND log N plus log D.
Is the amount of space you use important? No. You're using one column here.
Yeah, actually, it does not matter too much. If you have a slightly larger column, it does not help. And also, if you even, I think even if you have the entire column spread out, it does not also, it does not help. So here is, I guess, we have also actually developed the algorithm that I've shown. Kind of has some good guarantee, but it's nevertheless only producing this constant factor kind of guarantees on the result. And we also developed actually A star based algorithms that can solve instances with tens of objects and find the exact optimal solution. So here's one of this, I guess, video of a simulated Booz robot who also has a habit of kind of tidy things up, trying to rearrange these things so that they look as better. Now, while you're watching this, I want to mention some recent results that we've been doing with Mario. That is, we actually now could get the algorithm, the upper bound, to be O and D for most NMD. And for the case of N is much smaller than D, we actually could also achieve this this ND log D over log N upper bound. That is, we basically can have the upper bound meet the lower bound. I think I'm out of time. So with that, actually, I would like to conclude my talk. Again, I want to thank my fellow leaders and also sponsors of the research.
Lots of time for questions.
Questions? And also, again, glad to show you some of these things that we've done. All these experiments that we do, we could actually demonstrate them in our lab pretty much anytime if you would like to see. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Jeremy. I'm a senior at the
Assuming. So, for example, like the store arrangement problem. So, if you are designing something for an order to automatically arrange it, so the organization of the shelves may be totally different, right? Like you may have like from a particular slot users that make it easier to actually retrieve an item and place it. And this is what I think Amazon does in its completely automated stores. So, I think there is a disconnect between the actual problem that is being addressed. Like you are taking a human environment, or you're saying, "Oh, a robot will do the same thing in a human-like environment." So, is the problem easier, like if you tailor it for a robotic environment?
Yeah, so I think that's kind of something people do all the time. You take what you can do exist already, and you also want to design the environment as best as you can. I did not mention all the scenarios we want to address with this stack rearrangement problem. Actually, if you think about it, this does not disappear elsewhere as well. For example, you might have a bunch of building materials stacking together like this. And then you might want to retrieve something under this, and then how do you do this effectively? And there are many other, I guess, real-world examples that we are building our set problem. But of course, I agree with you that it does not completely make sense if you have a completely different design
of the robotic robots for.
This is just some small questions about the, maybe it's similar between the mapping of the sort of abstract problem to the physical problem. In the case of the Toro problem, when you actually do a demo, how do you decide how much clearance you want to take for objects?
Very good question. So currently, we actually are assuming we have the buffer available. So this actually, again, I did not have time to show. There are some practical applications actually assume the same thing as we did. So currently, we're assuming we have the buffer available. And we have current ongoing work. I tried to figure out, in the current workspace, how do we locate the buffer? Of course, that's a much harder problem. We want to solve the continuous problem as well.
Sort of remaining thing is sort of like if you think about the maybe like when you actually go to implement the continuous thing with the robot, you know, the actual robot movement that you showed with the guys pulling around on the table, like what was the kind of software engineering or sort of bridging that you had to do to sort of understand how the control policies on the actual robots needed to be tuned to implement the high-level plans that you have, and sort of did that affect the solution quality at all?
Yeah, so of course it does. So here for this particular manipulator, we've shown, right, we could get some gain, but that what we are optimizing is just the distance traveled by the anti-factor. This may not reflect all the gains that we can get. Potentially, the robot might work even better if we do this kind of, instead of leading distance, maybe L infinite distance, right? It might be better on L1. I guess for different robots, that may give us essentially different problem to work in the end. Some of these might actually be much harder, or some might be easy. Actually, we noticed that, for example, if now, here we are looking at the static problem. Right? Now, if you actually have the object actually move like on a conveyor belt, it seems that that actually makes the problem simpler. Mm-hmm. Somehow it appears to be harder, but it seems to be actually easier to solve. That is, the problem, once you have a moving belt, the solution quality somehow naturally improves.
Thanks.
No.